This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue with hour number two as we roll along this morning. Eitan Shander is going to join us this hour. We'll get the Philadelphia 76ers side of things. Also touch on the Jalen Hurts contract, $51 million a year. $255 for 5 years. He becomes the highest paid NFL player after leading the Eagles to the Super Bowl and had an MVP season. And we'll talk about the Sixers, who are a 3 seed in the Eastern Conference, handling Brooklyn no trouble whatsoever. So like the Celtics handling Atlanta, Philadelphia doesn't seem to have any trouble with a Brooklyn Nets team that went through its own change this season, like trading away Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. But the Eastern Conference, it's Milwaukee, Boston, and Philadelphia. No offense to Cleveland, no offense to New York. They're just not on the same level as those three teams. Milwaukee is dealing with an injury to Giannis, a lower back contusion. He is doubtful for tonight's game against the Miami Heat. It could mean some trouble for Milwaukee if Giannis doesn't play tonight and Miami gets a 2-0 lead heading back to South Florida. However, x-rays were clear for Giannis. He didn't participate in practice yesterday. Mike Budenholzer thinks that he's optimistic that he could see some minutes tonight. How much, we don't know. But Milwaukee does still have some firepower in Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez. But really, I mean, Giannis is Giannis. He stirs the drink. Use every cliche you want to use. I mean, they're not the same team without him. It's a very weird record. They can win with him. Like, they're 11-8 when he's not playing. So they've had 19 games this season when Giannis has not been in the lineup. They are 11-8. Now, most of those wins have come against lousy teams. Now, here's the thing. Some of those games are because he's injured. Some of those games because he sits out. And when you sit out, you usually sit out against bad teams. So it's if some of those games that he's sitting out because they're playing bad teams, Milwaukee ends up winning anyway. So it's a weird record in that, yes, they have a winning record when he's not playing, but you have to look at the devil in the details, right? Why are they 11-8 in 19 games when he's not playing? Well, because, you know, they're beating up this team or that team, they're not very good. You know, the Houston Rockets or the San Antonio Spurs or the Detroit Pistons or whoever that didn't make the playoffs this past season. But Eitan is going to give us the Sixers side of things. Now, I grew up in the 80s, and my introduction to the NBA was with the early 80s Celtics teams that, you know, went to the finals or competed heavily in the playoffs. And most of the time in the early 80s, the opponent that they would be facing in the East was the Philadelphia 76ers. And so it's kind of neat to see it in 2023, albeit Milwaukee is really the, you know, the top dog of the conference. I grew up with Larry Bird and first Dr. J, and the Sixers had Bobby Jones and Andrew Toney and Maurice Cheeks and Caldwell Jones and a number of really, really good players. And the Celtics had Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale, and later would get Danny Ainge and Dennis Johnson and a number of other players. And the Eastern Conference Finals between these two teams were really legendary. I mean, really legendary. In 1981, the Celtics would go on to beat the Houston Rockets in the NBA Finals, the Moses Malone Houston Rockets of 1981. But in order to do so, they had to beat a Sixers team coming down from a 3-1 deficit to win that series. 1982, they win and they beat Philadelphia again in the Eastern Conference Finals. They lost to Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference Finals, but they faced them again. And the Sixers went on and lost to the Lakers in the NBA Championship. It's a lot of the Lakers-Celtics 80s is a little muddled because the Rockets were kind of a presence in the NBA Finals as well. And I know I've said this before, but the Sixers were a team that had their fair run of Eastern Conference championships as well. They played the Lakers in 80. You probably remember the story if you weren't alive, but you probably remember the story of Magic Johnson having to play center in that series against Philadelphia. But the Sixers also went in 1982. They won the championship in 1983. And Boston didn't play the Lakers in the... Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. I shouldn't say they didn't play the Lakers. They played them in the 60s. But Larry Bird and Magic Johnson didn't play their first finals together against each other until 1984. So the writing of both of these guys and their legacy as superstars in the NBA were written against other teams, not against each other. Now, naturally, the NBA took the Lakers and the Celtics and that rivalry, and they elevated and they took off from that point, utilizing it as a springboard because the teams played in 84. They met in 85. I'm trying to think. They played in 87. 88. So they played a number of times against each other. But the Sixers were a team that were also part of that initial launch for the NBA. To set Magic and Larry against each other, you have two teams that don't get enough credit for what they did in the early part of the 80s, and that was the Houston Rockets and the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, the Rockets didn't win a title in that time, but Moses Malone and the Rockets were in the finals in 1981. Ralph Sampson and Hakeem Olajuwon were in the finals in 1986, beating the Lakers in the playoffs. But the Sixers had a presence. The Sixers had made a couple of finals. They won a championship. And it was really the first, before Celtics-Lakers, I grew up Celtics-Sixers. And that was really at the core of my infatuation with the NBA. When I was a kid, I went to Game 5 in 1982, and the Celtics were trailing in that series 3-1 after 4 games. And in Game 5, which was held at the Garden, so the series was going to go Game 5 at the Garden, Game 6 was going to be a Friday night at the Spectrum in Philadelphia, and Game 7 was going to be back at the Garden on Sunday. So the Celtics are trailing 3-1. Philadelphia is in the driver's seat. But back then, home court advantage was a really, really big deal. I mean, a real big deal. Like, you didn't feel like you could win on the road. Like, to win on the road was pretty miraculous. I mean, it was hard. Like, some of these arenas were really, really tough to play. I mean, you always heard about, like, the lighting was just a little different in this arena. The parquet at the Garden had dead spots. Like, you kept hearing different things. Or the acoustics of a certain arena was louder than other places. I mean, every arena had its, like, whether it was true or not, it didn't matter, right? When the legend becomes fact, print the legend. So maybe the lighting at the Great Western Forum wasn't that off, but you just believed it because you heard somebody say it, so you just believed it. Or maybe the parquet didn't have as many dead spots, but it didn't matter. You just sort of bought into it because that's the way it was. There was the mythical level of the NBA, and it made a young NBA fan like me sort of believe in the inevitability that you just couldn't win on the road. Like, you just go on the road and you would lose. So the Celtics had this home game in 1982, and they're beating Philadelphia, and I'm at the game with my brother, my father, my father's work friend, and everybody in the Garden. And if you've never been to the old Boston Garden before, the old Boston Garden was, how do I put it? It was a dump. It really, really was a dump, but it was our dump. You know, it was an old building, but you were on top of the action. Instead of an arena that kind of goes out and up, this was an arena that almost went straight up. Like, you were like looking down on the court. It really was a bizarre setting. And the noise would just come in, and everybody was chanting, "See you Sunday," because they were urging the Celtics to go beat the Sixers on Friday night at the Spectrum and come back to the Garden on Sunday and beat the Sixers again, down 3-1. And Boston won that game 5, and they went to Philadelphia, and they won game 6. I have no idea how they won game 6. They won game 6, only to have Philadelphia destroy them at the Garden, just annihilate them at the Garden in game. So it wasn't even so much as like believing that you couldn't win on the road. You watched two road teams win in this dramatic Eastern Conference playoffs. And Dr. J was magnificent, absolutely magnificent, so much so that the fans in Boston were serenading the Sixers to go beat L.A. That's where you first heard the beat L.A. chant, was directed to the Philadelphia 76ers to go beat the Lakers. Like, as much as we don't like you, we don't like the Lakers even more. So go beat them in the finals. And they didn't. The Lakers won that finals in 1982, but the Sixers would win the championship in 1982.
Yeah, because you can't beat L.A.
Right.
Well, if Boston and Philly meet up again, because they could, 2-3.
Yeah.
Will the same sentiment be there again if LA's playing?
Right. I wonder if there's enough old-timers who remember those days.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, too, it can only be the Lakers. If the Clippers were, the Western Conference Final champion, they'd be like, whatever.
No, there's still enough. There must be still enough. Because it's hard to pass down. It's not like Red Sox-Yankees, right?
Right,
Like, you can pass down Red Sox-Yankees to generation, but Lakers... Celtics Lakers is something that you may pass down the memory, but if you don't see it, like, and kids saw it. I mean, the Celtics beat the Lakers in the NBA Finals in 2008 and lost to the Lakers in 2010, but it wasn't I never felt like those two series equated to what the 80s had. Like, it just didn't feel the same. Like the sort of rivalry. Because a lot of the Lakers-Celtics of the 80s carried over from Lakers-Celtics in the 60s, right? Bill Russell and Bob Cousy and Jerry West.
Right,
and it carried over not that long ago. So you had, like, guys in 80 and 81 still hating the Lakers from things they saw either as kids or young men in the 60s. And it felt like, in 2008, it just felt like it was so removed 20-plus years.
Well, it felt forced.
Right? Yeah, it felt forced.
Yeah. That's what it was. For me, that was the feeling that I had watching that series was that, you know, it was like, you know, we're forcing the greatest rivalry in NBA history on you.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, hasn't really been a rivalry because both these teams were terrible for such a long time in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, they really didn't do anything.
I wonder if we're going to have the same thing. Philadelphia and Boston met in the playoffs before. I never felt like they drummed that up. I wonder if they would drum it up because both are decent.
Yeah, I wonder. That's true.
You know,
that's been
what, like, some good series, man.
Been nearly 40 years since they had a good rivalry in the Eastern Conference.
I had a chance. I became friends with the late Daryl Dawkins, and I remember talking to him about the games he participated in, and he told me how fun it was, those series, to go back and forth from the Garden to the Spectrum back in the day. All right, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sportsman Brady.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. As we roll along this morning, it's already Wednesday this week. Don't forget, the draft is in 1 week, a little over 1 week, Thursday night next week. All right, what is the good of the day?
Good of the day. There can only be one, Tony.
One. That's it?
Yeah, there was a quick little press conference yesterday. I don't know if you noticed or saw it. That was DeMar Hamlin, who has been cleared to resume NFL activities, and he himself has vowed to make a comeback to the Bills roster.
What an amazing story this is. Just like 3.5 months ago, if you really want to make it technical.
I mean,
that's
what was
when it
happened.
January 2nd.
Was it? No, it wasn't in January.
Yes, it was.
Was it January?
Yes, it was.
God, I thought for sure it was in December.
No, January 2nd.
That's even more remarkable.
Yep. It was week 16?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I knew that.
It was 17, week 17. Week 17.
That's right, because there's a week 18 now.
That's right, the week 18 now. Almost forget. I was trying to do the math.
We've only had it for 2 years, and we still can't remember.
Yeah, just January. It was January 2nd, and so 3.5 months?
Yeah.
And now he's... So what did we ever figure? I kind of lost the story as the season went on. Did we ever find out what was wrong? Was it correct? Was it remember the initial analysis was that he was hit at the exact microsecond that the heart was skipping? But that seemed like a theory, not a known fact. Because remember, people were like, "Well, we don't really know." Did we ever find out exactly what happened to him? Was that the answer? Because I'm going with that.
I think that's about as close as we can get to whatever it's going to be. I did see it, but I lost what the actual diagnosis was. But even if I told you what the actual diagnosis was, it wouldn't shed any light.
Right.
I mean, it's like three big medical words that I would probably butcher anyways. And you and I go, yeah, of course it's that.
Because
saw that on an episode of House once.
I've seen cardiologists say, well, if it's that, then there's no reason why he wouldn't come back. It could happen to anybody. Like it's just a lightning striking It's a very
very
rare occurrence, and he's not more or less prone to that than anybody else. So, yeah, so but we never got an official that was the reason. So I was still up in the air, like, does he have a heart condition? Does he have something that would prevent him from coming back?
Because usually that kind of opens up that door when you find that out.
Right. You find out, like, all right, he has a weak heart. You know, it's like finding out somebody had a heart condition. Like, they were an athlete, but they died at, like, 42 or something. And you're like,
I was watching a video the other day, and it was Adam Silver. It was like an old TikTok video. Adam Silver calling up a player's name because his dream was to play in the NBA, but he found out he was a center for Baylor.
Oh right, okay.
And he found out, like, during the offseason workouts in between, you know, the end of the basketball season and the NBA draft, that he had this genetic heart defect that was going to prohibit him from playing any further.
Can you imagine finding that out?
Yeah.
As you are getting examined to be a professional basketball player?
Yeah.
Like, you're thinking, my life is going to be heading to the pros.
And you're not thinking that. You're just, you've been playing college basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, you're healthy and you're an athlete. Yeah, you're just like, oh, it's just routine. You know, these teams just need a physical of you, and then a more thorough physical than what you've ever gone through. And they found this.
Find out, yeah.
But they, you know, Adam Silver still did the whole thing where he's calling him up on name so he can hear his name being called. There was just no team associated with it, obviously.
Right.
But, you know, but that to me is like, you know, that's Damar Hamlin, right? I mean, he gets hit, almost dies on the field. You learn something from that. Like, oh, you have this. We never thought to check for this, but you have this. But apparently he doesn't.
They were never the same after that. The Bills just never looked the same.
No.
I remember you and I talking about that. That when they lost to Cincinnati in the playoffs, everything we thought the Bills would do, rallying around Damar Hamlin, annihilating their opponents, they never did it. They struggled in the season finale against the Patriots. They struggled against the Dolphins and barely won a game against a third-string quarterback. And then they just got taken to the barn and destroyed by Cincinnati.
Yep.
I mean, just annihilated by Cincinnati.
I mean, it shook them.
It really did. I'm not making excuses, but I think seeing a teammate that you love and care about almost die and not knowing what his life was going to be like or like, and wondering every day if he was going to make it for at least the first touch and go parts before he cleared out of there. I think shook him. Even when they knew he was okay, they still weren't the same team, but that is great news. And I hope he has success. I really do. I hope he has, I hope he makes it. I hope there's a story on the back end, because I hate the NFL business is cruel, right? And and the Bills, there's no sentimental roster spot for a guy. Like, they don't keep you on because you're a feel good story. Damar Hamlin is going to have to earn it and keep it. And if he doesn't keep it, this feel-good moment goes away when he's playing for the Arizona Cardinals, and then we lose track of him. You know, and then we find out, oh, he's on his fourth team in 5 years because he's just bouncing around the league. So I hope he's successful. I hope that he is able to, you know, keep it. There'll be a feel-good moment for a while, but then after a while, the business kicks in. So I hope he's as effective as he was that earned that starting job.
And not a Malcolm Butler
situation, exactly,
where...
Yeah.
Yeah. Malcolm Butler was, you know, the most important Patriot of all time for a little bit.
Yep.
Until, you know, he wasn't. And then it was like, I don't even know if he's on a team right now.
Yeah. Think about Hard Knocks, right? I mean, again, I know it's different because he suffered a life-threatening injury. But think about Hard Knocks. How many times we see a player and he just works his tail off. And he's a good dude. And you hear, like, the coaches in the meetings talk about how great he is and he's awesome. But you know what happens at the end of the season? They go, it's just a matter of numbers, man. We can't keep you. You know, so I hope he keeps his job and is a Buffalo Bill for a while. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, Tony, is I want you to put this on your calendar right now, September 29th, 2023.
That's easy. That's my brother's birthday.
Oh, perfect. Do you know what else is happening that day?
I will remember, yes.
You know what else is happening that day? It's the last time Netflix will send out a DVD in their trademark red envelope.
They're done with that?
Yeah, I didn't know they were still doing that.
That's still a service?
That's still a service.
Like, I go to Netflix all the time. I never see that option.
I never,
you hear your movies that you can stream, but do you want to do the DVD thing? I never see that.
Yeah, so your brother's birthday is the last time Netflix will do those red envelopes.
Wow.
Where you can get a DVD in the mail and then return it. I guess at your leisure. I don't know. Are they getting all the DVDs back? I have no clue.
I sometimes forget, and this is shame on me. I sometimes forget that there are pockets in this country and there are people who don't get the internet, who don't have the internet, who can't afford it, or it doesn't go to their area of the country. And I kind of think everyone has it, and everybody's got high speed, and nobody's on dial up. But there are places in America where internet's hard to get, or it's not affordable.
Yeah.
I
was cleaning out my garage the other day, and there was just my wife and I, for the longest time, we've talked about it, where we collected these DVDs, especially from Blockbuster, where you used to buy all the latest movies after they had ran a circulation. It was like, you can get these things for $5 now.
Yeah.
So we just kept buying DVD after DVD after DVD. We had this gigantic box of DVDs that I just ran right over to Goodwill. I'm like, here it is.
Yeah.
My sons were like, oh, you got to keep the Star Wars ones. You got to keep them. I'm like, why?
I'm with you 100%.
I'm like, we don't have a DVD player.
Yep. I'm with you 100%. That used to be the status symbol.
Yes.
Where people would go, I've got all these movies. I've got 400 movies in my collection. And you would go to people's houses and be like, wow, look at all those DVDs.
Look at that library.
That's incredible. Look at that library. And you're 100% right. You never use them. You never dive back into them.
My sons were like, well, what if we want to watch Star Wars? I'm like, just go to Disney Plus. What if we want to watch Harry Potter? It's shown all the time.
Right. You'll find it. That also ruined a lot of good gift ideas. You know what I mean? Like, for Christmas, my wife would be like, he likes Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'll get him the box set. I still have it upstairs.
Yeah.
Like I've got the Indiana Jones box set, Star Wars box set, Harry Potter box set, James Bond box set. Like, I got a bunch of them. And they just sit there. They don't move. They haven't been moved in years. Other than maybe to clean the shelf.
And that's literally what we did was, I mean, with this gigantic box of DVDs, we just moved it from one place to another place to another place. And then, sure, there were some that I took out. Like, oh, my kids will like it. You know, you can play a DVD on their PlayStation, but they never watch it.
Right.
You know, and I was just like, why are we holding on to the past here?
This is completely
something we just don't need.
We got the dumb coming up, and then we got Eton Shander this hour. Talk Phillies and Sixers and Eagles. So that's all coming up as Hour 2 continues. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb. Eton Shander's joining us in 15 minutes. We'll talk Eagles and their contract with Jalen Hurts and the Sixers as they are up 2-0 over Brooklyn, heading to Brooklyn for game 3. But like the Boston-Atlanta series, I just don't see anything from Brooklyn's way of making this a series. And nobody thought that, right? I think in the West, we have a little bit more like, hey, the Lakers, I think, could beat the Grizzlies. Or, what's the three matchup? Maybe Golden State could have beaten the Sacramento Kings, right?
Before the series. Now it's like, hey, Kings can go up 3-0.
Yeah. Now, like, in the West, we had this feeling like maybe Denver, Minnesota won't be interesting, but everything else could be really interesting.
Yeah.
Nobody thought that in the East. Like, nobody thought the games with the top three seeding teams would be interesting. And so far, two of them are not interesting, but the Milwaukee-Miami one is a little interesting now with Giannis's back in.
Yeah, but anyway, it takes that for it to get
it
interesting.
It takes that for that to be interesting. All right, let's get back to the good, the bad, and the dumb, and the dumb of the day.
The dumb of the day, which I'm glad we're doing our own segment because there's a little more attached to it that now I can't attach to it because I wasn't planning on before. But the dumb of the day is Juan Soto. Padres outfielder Juan Soto. Yeah, he's having a hard time adjusting to the pitch clock because it doesn't allow him the time he needs to get ready, to get, you know, to get, you know, all the gear on and to play mind games with the pitcher.
Yeah, well, too bad. That's the point.
And yeah. You know, I guess he's using that to explain why he's batting 143.
Well, he's a young man, right?
Yeah.
So you just kind of go, all right, young man, you have to figure this out. That's the way it goes. And you know what? You're not a veteran enough to warrant the inability to change on really quickly. It's not like you're a 10-year veteran mm-hmm. of this sport that you're like, wow, this is going to be really hard for him to adjust. You're still a young 22-year-old kid.
Yeah, but that was part of the problem that we were having before with what was going on is that he's one of those guys that needs time to adjust his batting gloves right. and to slow the game down to kind of break the pitcher off his rhythm so he can play those mind games that we're all sitting there like, okay, can you just step into the batter box and take a pitch already?
Do you think Rob Manfred just should come out in his whenever press conference he's doing and say, hey, you know what? Hey, guys, I know you're not asking about this. I know you want to talk about expansion and all that other stuff. But I want to message to all you players out there. We're never going back, so suck it up. And I don't want to hear your excuses. Yeah. Don't send me emails. Don't call our office. Don't complain to your agent. We're never taking the pitch clock down. We've done the research. And you know what, guys? You're the reason why games were 4 hours in July. So that stop it. We're not going back. We're not doing it. So if you're batting 170 and you want to blame the pitch clock, you want to blame me, and you want to direct all your fan ire at me for changing the rules, no, too bad. You know what? Suck it up.
Which
you're
is perfect.
Figure it out. You're a professional athlete. Do it.
Like you just said, 4 hour game in July. Who needs that?
Who needs that? Right. Exactly.
But it brought me to a larger point because the Major League Baseball is flirting with other rule changes, and they always do this in the Atlantic Division. So
right, sure.
Couple of the other rule changes that they are flirting with is instead of having, you know, two times for the pitcher to throw over to first base, they may limit it down to one. Just to keep it at two.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's not really. I think that one's going to get thrown out, but I think they're just experimenting it. One is the use of a designated hitter. I mean, a designated runner. I'm sorry. Who can enter the game multiple times. Right now, they'll use a pinch runner.
But when they use a pinch runner, doesn't it take the person out of the game?
It takes that player out of the game, right.
Yeah. So are they experimenting with
a designated runner? So it basically means, you know, that guy doesn't even have to be good at baseball. It could just be fast.
Yeah,
just take a track star and teach him how to slide. Yeah,
exactly.
I'm not a big fan of that one either. But the one that I do like is it's called the double hook. Now, have you heard about this one?
No.
So the double hook is that when you take out the starting pitcher, you're also taking out the designated hitter.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So it's kind of forcing teams to use a little bit more strategy, keep that starting pitcher in a little bit longer.
So what they're trying to do is keep a little of the National League flavor into the process. A little bit, right? Because if you mm-hmm. When a pitcher is cruising in a tight game, but he's gone six innings and he's just mowing down the opposition, but he's coming up in the order of a tight game, you might say, all right, I gotta pull him. I gotta replace his bat. He stinks at the plate. I gotta put in a solid bat. We're in a tight game, and so even though he gave us six solid innings and could give us eight solid innings, he's got to go. Or he's cruising and the inning is rolling along and we're trying to accumulate runs and we've got bases loaded in two outs and he's supposed to come up to the plate. I have to take him out of the game and put him. So they're trying to add a
flavor
to that.
I mean, it could also just be, you know, it's like, hey, try to get these starters to play a little bit longer.
Yeah, a little bit longer.
Because right now we have starters, like if they make it to the fifth inning, we're happy.
We're never going to see a complete game again.
Because, I know.
Like in 10 years, one's going to – like 9 innings would be insane.
I read this article, and I think this guy's 100% right because Clayton Kershaw won his 200th game yesterday.
Right.
And, you know, the way he put it in this article was, we're never going to see a 300-game winner again, are we?
I don't think so. I agree with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that article. I don't think we are.
Like, for you and I, like coming of age in the 90s, we had three of them.
Yeah.
We got to 300. You know, and it's like, yeah, I 100% agree that what's it going to take for a pitcher to get to 300 wins now?
I know. That's very true.
Kershaw just got to 200, and he's been on a team, a very successful team. You know, I mean, that's, and that goes along with the fact of we're we shouldn't be satisfied with your starting pitcher just going five innings and then going to bullpen.
Right.
Right. And I think it's, there's too much analytics going on in baseball. So maybe this is, I think it's another avenue to kind of speed up the game.
Yeah. I would tell baseball, I don't know, don't be like that person that goes, you know what, I'm going to build an addition to my house. And then he just puts up a little extra room. And then while he's doing it, he goes, you know what, I think I need another one. Or I think I need a new deck. I think I need a new barn. I think, don't be that person.
Right.
That one project opens a floodgate, and next thing you know, you've changed the entire compound of your house. You tried to speed up the game. You're speeding up the game. There's no need to really dabble in multiple things. I do think that umpire assisted computers that help balls and strikes would be a big help.
Yep.
I'm not saying go umpire less. That's stupid. But I do think that.
But you get the feeling that they're almost drunk with power right now, because they did make a lot of changes, and we're all sitting back going, oh my God, pitch clock, unbelievable. I didn't really understand why you wanted to make the bases bigger, but now I'm seeing that stolen bases are going up. Fantastic.
Yeah, right, right, exactly. You know, you're getting positive feedback, so you're like, well, what about this?
Yeah.
What about this?
Look what's behind curtain number two.
Right, yeah, like what, instead of seeing a lumbering fat blah 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 on the bases, you could see former USC track star Joe Smith running the base. Like slow down. There is a strategic element to some of this stuff that you don't want to keep blowing up. Right, I mean, like, we don't want a roster filled with just guys who run bases. That's silly. Like, I don't even know how to hit. It doesn't matter. I'm fast. You know, like that. Like, no, we don't need that.
I mean, if I, like, you're a fast guy, like, you know, Billy Hamilton could hit. But, I mean, he was, like, the last fast guy that sticks out of my mind.
Right. Right. I remember him. Yeah.
He could hit. But, I mean, he wasn't a great, great hitter. But it would just be putting him on the base. Like, anytime you got, I don't know, Milky Cabrera or Albert Pujols from last year, because he couldn't run worth anything.
So
you put, you know, he gets on base, but then you put a runner in for him.
So just chill, just slow down. You know what? We don't want to have to turn. We don't want to turn this to another sport.
Yeah.
Like, we want it to look something like it was before. Like, hey, wouldn't it be great if we just put the ball on a tee? Wouldn't that be great, fans?
Exactly.
And instead of nine players on a team, we'll do 11. That'll be, we'll do that. Huh? No. Slow down. It's we don't need any of this.
But I do like.
Wouldn't it be great if we just gave everybody helmets and shoulder pads?
I do like the idea of the double hook, though. I might be
the double hook might be interesting.
I might be a minority in that. I think Matt Pauly also tweeted that out, that he feels like he's the minority. But it would be kind of refreshing to see a starting pitcher go more than five, six innings.
I know I said this before. I didn't appreciate National League Baseball until I covered the Rockies on a daily basis. And I really saw a strategic element that was missing in all the American League games I was watching as a kid. Like, it really was like, oh, this is neat. Like, there really is a dynamic to when the pitcher is up at the plate. So it's not going to be entirely like that with that double hook rule, but at least it might bring some of that back into play, which is kind of, you know, kind of cool, especially if you have a really strong DH. And you know that he's connected to the pitcher in his appearance, and it might even be better, because it might keep pitchers in way longer. Because if you don't have a strong designated hitter, you don't want to replace him with just an average old pinch hitter. You know, you might go, yeah, let's go an extra inning, keep him out there. All right, it's Wake Up Call on Sportsman Radio. Eton Shander next to talk Eagles and Sixers. Busy week in Philadelphia.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, hooking up with Eitan Shander in Philadelphia to join us this morning to talk Eagles, who again make Jalen Hurts the highest paid player in the NFL, $51 million annually, and the Philadelphia 76ers, who are up 2-0 in their series with Brooklyn. Not a big surprise. Joel Embiid, likely to win the MVP award, was the NBA scoring leader this year. Philadelphia, part of that trio at the top of the Eastern Conference, that if you were going to say who is going to come out of the East, you'd look at both, all three of those teams, you could pick one. But Philadelphia third, they're not going to get much of a challenge against Brooklyn in this series, but they could down the road. And I once we get to that moment where whatever happens to Giannis and the Bucks, if they're back at too close to 100% and Boston and Philadelphia, all three of those in the mix in the Eastern Conference, it becomes very, the Eastern Conference becomes a lot more compelling. The West, I think, is compelling no matter what. I think it's like last night's a perfect example of that with the Clippers and Phoenix. Phoenix bounces back. They hit those mid-range jump shots that they're good for. They get good games from Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Durant doesn't go just with one field goal attempt in the final 7 minutes. They beat the Clippers and even up that series. Now you've got the news of Draymond Green being suspended for game 3 on Thursday night for Golden State after stomping on Domantas Sabonis in game 2. And that could allow Sacramento not only to win this series, but win the series rather easily and sit back and wait for round number 2, which something I didn't think was going to happen at the beginning of the playoffs, because again, it felt like outside of one series, and I think it's Denver, Minnesota, you know, that really didn't have any compelling angle to it, that every other series in the West had a compelling storyline, had something interesting, something to wonder about. LeBron James and the Lakers are playing better. Golden State, you know, will they play differently in the postseason than we saw in the playoffs? And right now, we're getting answers to those. Golden State didn't turn on a switch. They didn't magically flip from a regular season team that was going through the just ups and downs of a season, right? Get us to the playoffs. Then in a situation of where they are looking at it going, hey, you know what? We actually have work to do. And now we're going to be losing one of our players. So with Draymond Green out, it could be an early exit for Golden State. But the East only had one compelling series in the first round, and that was the Knicks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, because they were about even. I think the Knicks took 3 of 4 during the regular season, and they're the 5 seed. And that's a 4 or 5 matchup. You expect a 4 or 5 matchup to be good. But Miami taking game 1 against a Bucks team that is now up in the air with the status of Giannis Antetokounmpo is interesting, because Miami is experienced enough that they can come bite you, right? But they're dealing with in a series without Tyler Hero. So they've got their own injury issues as well. But the Celtics are cruising past the Atlanta Hawks, and the Sixers are cruising past the Brooklyn Nets in the opening round of the series. So we're working on getting Eitan on to talk about those. Go back to the Draymond Green suspension that came down late yesterday. Said this in hour number 1. I don't think that this was a suspendable action. I know that there are a lot of people who think that it was. Fine. I'm not outraged by it. I don't think there's some injustice here. I don't think that this deserves scrutiny by the NBA. I'm okay with it. It's not a decision I would have made. But when the NBA came out yesterday and said, oh, okay, here's the real reason. The reason is his reputation. He has a reputation in these playoffs over the years of doing something that causes us to relook and rethink his status in the playoffs. Whether it was last year against Memphis, whether it was against the Cavaliers in the finals a couple of years ago, there's always an incident with Draymond Green that makes you go, he gets into these tussles, he overreacts in these tussles, and then we have to come down and do something. Now, does reputation matter? It does. It always has in sports. It always had in sports, right? The idea that you have paid your penalty and every case is a fresh page, it doesn't exist in life, and it doesn't exist in sports. And that's just the way it is. You rob a bank and you keep robbing banks. When you rob the bank the fourth time, you're going to get a stiffer punishment than when you robbed it the first time, right? That's just the way we are. We are habitual, right? I mean, Draymond Green, it's habitual. He gets involved in something every time. And my biggest concern about this from his standpoint is, while I understand, again, and I agree with the pundits who said, look, there is something about the Golden State team that almost allows him to do this, where they don't hold him accountable for this, that he becomes what they all want to be in these tough series, so that he is looked at by his teammates and his coaching staff as a very, very valuable asset, even beyond what he does for them defensively or as a player on the court in any capacity. That he is, in the postseason, a needed spark. He's right. He's the friend that will go the extra mile, and he'll go where you won't go in certain situations to help the group. Right? You're all together out and you want to try to get into a club, and you know it's like very, very elite, and you have that one buddy that's like, screw it, I'm going to go convince the bouncer to let us all in. Right? Everyone else is too nervous to go talk to the bouncer, but you have that one buddy that goes there and he's like, guys, I did it. We're all getting in. In fact, meet Chad now. He's my new best friend. There's always that one guy in the group, the one guy that gets in backstage, or the one guy that gets, you know, when we were kids, it was always one that had no problems getting us into the movies for free. Like, all that's Draymond Green. Steph Curry won't do this. Klay Thompson won't do this. All the players in the past won't do this, but Draymond will. Draymond picks up I don't want to say he's like an enforcer on a hockey team, because he's more valuable than that. But he's the guy that is able to be an emotional outlet of frustration when the team is frustrated. And that's where Draymond was selling Draymond when he was on the podium right after the game Monday night. When he was speaking and saying, hold on. Right? He's like, they grabbed my ankle twice and they didn't call it. It's as if he was saying, guys, don't you see it my way? But he's ruined the chance to get an objective view of that. He's ruined his chance to have most of the media and the public see it on his side. I agree with him. I think that him getting his ankle held on two occasions when he's trying to change direction is dangerous. But they gave Sabonis a technical for that. They did not see it. They may have on the Malik Monk one, but they saw it on the second one enough to give him a technical. And so he was saying, but in the heat of the moment, he was frustrated because at that moment there, it had already happened to him once before. No call was made. And at that moment, no call was being made when Sabonis grabbed his ankle. So the technical comes after the fact and after the stomp. But at the moment of the stomp, he's frustrated. But he can't sell it. He can't sell it because he's Draymond Green. He can't sell it because in the past he's done all sorts of things to players, right? In all sorts of times that he's gotten in trouble with this league. So the league has made it very clear. No, you know what? If you were somebody else, we might have taken your story into consideration. But because of what happened in the past, we're not going to let this go. Your reputation did matter here. The NBA statement said this, quote, the suspension was based in part on Green's history of unsportsmanlike acts. That's as clear as it gets.
You know, earlier in the show, you had mentioned that if this happened to anybody else, that they probably wouldn't have been suspended.
Right.
And at first I was like, no. I think, you know, like you said, Jordan Poole had done this. I think there would have been suspension. If Chris Paul had done this, there probably would have been a suspension. But you know what? I'm kind of going back on it a little bit, because I do think his history is the X factor.
Right. Exactly. Remember he had an incident with LeBron James in 2016. It didn't spark the Warriors to a finals championship because Cleveland came back and won that series. They were down 3-1. But Also, I think in that year he messed around with Steven Adams, Oklahoma City, Steven Adams.
Yeah.
Right? And then was it Brandon Clark last year? I'll have to look it up. But he took down a Memphis Grizzlies player in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, almost like, remember that? It was like a clothesline,
I
right?
I think it was Brandon Clark, but I'm not sure. But he clothesline, yeah.
Yeah.
Where he got in trouble with the NBA for that. So he's had just a number of these incidents, and he lost the jury, right? He couldn't sell this one as an independent, isolated incident.